If your libido's in the toilet, sex hurts like hell, and an orgasm is out of the question, I've got your back. Come Again, Sexuality and Orgasm is my solution-driven limited series podcast to get your libido to kick in and your clitoral nerve endings to wake up. You can find Come Again on drstriker.substack.com. Transdermal estrogen in the form of a patch, gel, or cream is often the preferred delivery method for menopausal hormone therapy, since unlike oral estrogen, it doesn't increase the risk of blood clots in addition to a number of other advantages. But a new study published in the journal Menopause indicates that your transdermal estrogen may not be doing what you think it's doing. And today I'm speaking with one of the authors of that study. Dr. Louise Newson is a physician, menopause specialist, and a member of the UK government's Menopause Task Force. She's also a best-selling author and a podcaster. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause midlife and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. Welcome, Dr. Newson. Yeah, I could have made your bio a lot longer, but that would have taken too much time. I scheduled this interview to talk to you about your recent study, and we were trying to juggle UK and US time zones, and then we both realized that you were going to be in the United States to speak at an event where, coincidentally, I was also speaking. So here we are in Texas. And thank you for jumping in and talking to me after a very long day. I want to mention that we're sharing a microphone in a hotel room, so I apologize in advance for not perfect sound quality, but I thought it was worth it to take advantage of being together. All right, so let's get right to it. All right, so when women are in hormone therapy, serum estrogen levels are not typically measured. And what exception to that rule with menopause experts is if someone's continuing to have hot flashes and insomnia despite consistently using whatever the prescribed dose is. And more often, if those levels come back low, it turns out that that person was using something transdermal, an estrogen, a patch, or a gel. So this is not new to the menopause world, but it's also not widely understood or accepted. So can you start by telling me what made you do this study? What was going on?
Do you know what? It's very interesting, actually, because years ago, so it must be about 9 years ago, nearly 10, I was perimenopausal, experiencing symptoms and really struggling. And you can't, you know, it's very different when it's yourself, isn't it? You know, and so I managed to see Nick Panay, who was, as you know, the chair of the International Menopause Society. And in fact, I was really rude to his receptionist because he had a really long wait. And
he's a really famous guy.
Precisely. So I phoned up and they said, oh, he's got an appointment in 6 months' time. And I just said, no, I need help now. Anyway, I saw him. He prescribed me some transdermal estradiol and some micronized progesterone, very standard. Fine, I'm low risk. I get migraine. But other than that, I've not got a history of anything. And I was really upset because I didn't feel better. Now, my mother and my mother-in-law both take hormones. They have done for decades. And they said, oh, but you should be feeling better by now. And I said, well, I don't, actually. I was getting some night sweats. I've never had hot flushes, and I was maybe a bit less sweaty, but nothing to like write home about. So I waited 3 months, because that's what we usually say to patients, went back to Nick and he said, well, let's do your blood test. Now, I'd never done any blood test before as a GP. I would just be symptomatically treating people.
That's something that we did routine.
Precisely, yeah. So he did my blood test and my estradiol level was 110, which is low. And he said, well, let's double your patches. Let's give you 200 micrograms.
Here, because when we're talking transdermal, it can be a patch. It can
be a gel. Absolutely. So,
you were using.
He started prescribing me 100 micrograms. I was perimenopausal. So he gave me 100 micrograms and he gave me some progesterone. And the first 6 weeks, I remember bleeding so heavily. And I was thinking, gosh, this is what women must experience. But I thought, no, I always say to women, the first 3 to 4 months, you know, you might get some bleeding. So I persisted and it did settle. But then I didn't feel better. So my level was low. So he doubled the dose and said, I'll give you 200. And I said, oh, Nick, that's a really high dose. I've never prescribed that before. And he said, well, Louise, it's obvious you're not absorbing it through the skin. So if you have more of something that you're not absorbing, you'll absorb an adequate amount. So then he increased the dose. Within days, my night sweats started to improve and my joint pain actually improved. And I have a lot of migraines when my hormones are all up and down, and my migraines, my head started to clear. So I thought, brilliant. So then a couple of years later, I'm starting to do my clinic thinking, actually, I'm going to be doing some estradiol levels because I don't want women to be under estrogenized. Yeah. Because I'm very interested not just to help people feel better, but improve their future health.
Right.
And that's that really important.
Quality of life, but length of life.
Absolutely, for sure. So that's another reason for optimizing hormones. But, you know, my clinic's got busier and busier. We see thousands of women a month through the clinic with all the clinicians that work with me. So we've got all this data. So
Let me just interrupt you for a second, because people in the US are not familiar with your clinic.
Yeah, of course.
Your clinic is very specifically for the care of women
with hormonal
issues, experiencing perimenopause and postmenopause symptoms. You're not doing general women's health.
No,
correct?
So we are all general physicians, so family physicians. So we're not, we've got one OBGYN.
Right. So
other than that, we're all GPs. I've got some nurses and pharmacists that work as well. But women come, they self-refer. So they come because they're experiencing symptoms. And they usually come because they're completely let down by the NHS. So a lot of them being offered or prescribed antidepressants.
The National Health Service.
Exactly that. So we see lots of people from all over the UK who come with symptoms. And actually about 52% of women who come to see us are already on HRT.
Yeah.
So we're quite a specialist clinic, you know.
So you're coming to do the more nuanced care of people that are already fine with the notion of hormone therapy, but are saying it's not working.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. So you're giving these women transdermal estrogen, and you are finding that many of them are having lower levels than
absolutely
expected.
Yes.
So then what happens?
So then it depends. So sometimes we'll change from a patch to a gel, or if they're on a patch, or if they're on a gel, we might go, well, let's try a different gel, or let's try patches, because it's all about the absorption through the skin.
Right. So let me back up a little bit, because I do want to get to the differences between patches and gels.
Yeah.
But what I really want to start off with is I really want to talk about the study, because the reason that you did this study, correct me if I'm wrong, is because with your clinical experience of treating thousands of women, you were observing that many of these women had lower than expected blood levels of estrogen, correct?
Yeah.
And then you started prescribing higher doses. You got a lot of pushback for that.
I've had a lot of pushback for a lot of time about everything I do.
About everything. But let's just focus on this. We'll get to that stuff later.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But I didn't do this.
The point is was the reason that you did this study to kind of say, hey, look, this is why I'm giving women higher levels?
No, not at all. Because Nick Panny taught me, because I presumed other people did it, I just did it because we've got a lot of data in our clinic, and I feel duty-bound, morally bound, ethically bound to share the data. And I fund a very small research team. As you know, I don't work with pharma, so I don't have any external funding for anything I do. And it takes a long time, doesn't it? So we do clinical audits. So we've done them for years since the clinic's been open, looking at dosing. And we also, in our template, so we have a clinical template that's, you know, a computerized record for the consultations. Since quite early on, what I decided to do to make it mandatory for all the doctors to put their dosing before they could save the consultation. So we know that it's accurate, because as you know, I might prescribe one dose to you as a patient, and then you might change your dose and it might not be on the record. So
well, particularly too much with patches.
But with gel, it's quite often
a lot of times someone
people might increase or reduce.
Like
or
they get nervous, their manicurist tells them it's going to cause cancer.
Yeah.
So they cut
then
it.
Then they reduce,
Or they think, gee, I need more that, you know, you're absolutely right.
So every consultation, every clinician who works with me has had to save it. So we've got all this data. So I'm saying to the team, we need to write this up. We need to look at it and actually see, is there any correlation between the dosing and the absorption and then levels? And let's see what the range of doses are we're prescribing.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics of the study. Mm. How many women were included in the study? And what kind of transdermal estrogen were they using? And what did you find?
So it was over 1,500 that we used. So it was a good number, but it was observational. So we were just doing the same clinical practice that we were with. Obviously, there are different studies, and some studies are set up for something. But this was just observing what we do day to day in our practice.
It's important to point out that when we look at different types of studies, there's real world observational studies that, as you said, were just keeping track of what we're doing, as opposed to one of these studies where you give half the people the fake stuff,
and
half
the people
the real stuff, and nobody knows what anyone's getting, and then you see the outcome.
Yeah, this was real world. Yeah,
real
absolutely, world absolutely. So we where most of the people who come to us, we do give transdermal to, because as you know, there's no risk of clot or stroke, and it's just, you know, gets absorbed as a pure estradiol. We have a spray in the UK. I don't know. Do you have the spray?
It's called Evamist. It is quite frankly not very popular because it's quite expensive.
Right.
Most insurance companies don't cover it. But we do have a spray.
Okay. So we have one called Lenzetto, but we tend to not prescribe it because we found in our clinical experience it, you know, wasn't well absorbed. It was people were coming back with more symptoms. So in this study, it was the patches and the gels. And we looked at everybody. So some people are only on estrogen, some people are on progesterone as well, some people have an intrauterine, you know, device like a Mirena coil. But we were just looking at the estrogen.
We were just looking at the estrogen levels.
In this, all we were doing was looking at the dosing and the levels and their symptoms. So every patient that comes to the clinic, we do a modified Green climacteric score. So it's of the symptoms, so we can look at those symptoms as well.
And when you look at symptoms, I mean, obviously the obvious: sleep, hot flashes, joint pain.
Yeah.
Were you looking at vulvar vaginal symptoms?
So it's got 21 symptoms. So it's, you know, the usual vasomotor symptoms, but it's also got headaches, joint pains, brain fog, memory problems, you know.
The top 10.
Everything. Absolutely.
What did you find? Of the women, okay, so let's just be clear. When we're talking about giving estrogen, there are what we call basically the appropriate doses, which means our FDA, your equivalent to the FDA, has said this is the dose that you should be using. And of course, there's a low, a medium, and a high.
Yeah.
So if you were sticking to the, you know, prescribed dosages, including the higher dosages, what were you finding as far as estrogen levels?
So we were finding there was a huge variation. We've got a great graph on the paper with, it's like a scatter chart, really. And it's showing dots all over. There is a slight correlation between higher dose, higher level, but there are women who have very high levels, so good absorption when they are on a low dose, and others with a very poor absorption, so a lower level when they're on a higher dose. So it's all over the place. It's unpredictable.
And did you find that there was a difference between women using patches versus the gels?
Yeah, so that really varies. And so there was some better absorption, it seems, with the gel. But when I speak to, so we've got really good relationship with our laboratories. We use two different laboratories.
Laboratories. That's much better than laboratory.
So, but they actually say that the gel is a bit like fairy dust or glitter, you know, it just gets everywhere. So you can get some contamination a lot easier. You can imagine if you stick the patch to your back, you're not touching your back, are you? You're not touching that glue. Whereas the gel, you know, can. So we did find some really spurious results. So we had some women with very high levels, and we looked at those women, but then they had always, because our protocol in our clinic is if someone has a high level, we repeat it, like you do often in medicine, don't you? If a result's a bit spurious, you don't just panic, you just often repeat. So we repeated it, and then their levels were normal. And what's very interesting, I'm sure these women were either using gel and it was contaminated, or they were perimenopausal. And you know, when women are perimenopausal, then they're really up and down. So once we looked at that, we still found that there was a slight improved or slight better absorption with the gel, maybe, but there wasn't much difference, to be honest.
Now, I remember the number 20% pop I had of roughly 20% of women who were even on the highest standard dose still had what we call subtherapeutic levels, meaning that they weren't even in the ballpark of what they needed in order to get symptom relief.
So it was about just over 20% needed higher than licensed dose.
It's 1%,
which is 1 out of 5.
Yes, 1 out of 5 women who are using a transdermal estrogen may not be getting the level that they need to get in order to not only alleviate symptoms, but some other issues as well. So it's actually kind of shocking. You know, one of the things is years ago, I remember when I first started noticing that some of my patients had low levels because I was also started to check and people just weren't getting symptoms.
Yes.
And I would say, are you using it? And they're you always blame the patient first. Right? They're like, no, I'm being consistent. Mm-hmm. And I called up our colleague, Jim Simon, who I know Jim Simon as well, because he was always my go-to. Mm. And I said, Jim, what's the deal? I mean, why aren't these women getting appropriate amounts? Mm. And his answer was, you are correct in that there are many women that are not getting the right level. He said, I don't know if they are metabolizing too quickly or not absorbing, which is an interesting concept because it's the whole idea of we kind of assume that it's they're not absorbing or it's getting rubbed off on their genes or something.
Yeah, yeah.
When in fact, it may be that some people just metabolize in a different
way. It's really interesting because we even like in the 70s and 80s, there's studies showing that people need different doses of oral estrogen.
Yeah.
For and the you know, one of the quotes from the study then was saying that women need often different doses for the same effects. Yeah. And we know this with other medicines. You know, when people have underactive thyroid glands and we give them thyroxine, I've had patients on 25 micrograms and I've had others needing 250 micrograms. So we know that. And you know, I used to work in a diabetes clinic and you'd see little frail wizened ladies on really high doses of insulin. Right. You're like, how are they? And they must be metabolizing it
And I think
two
factors.
But absolutely.
In the article, you proposed a number of different reasons why someone may not absorb.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you could run through the reasons and then what you think. There's always the difference between... Yeah. What we all write in a scientific article versus in your heart of hearts.
Yeah.
Why do you think some women
can't
absorb?
I think a lot of it is just different skin type. So we know the skin temperature, the skin thickness, even the location of where they, especially the patches are placed, is going to be very different. And I remember years ago seeing a lady who had endometriosis, and she kept telling me every time she drove her car, her symptoms got worse. She got pain and I couldn't work it out. And then, you know, in medicine, it's usually in the history. So I kept asking. Anyway, it was whenever she got in the car, she had the heated seats on, the patches then absorbed more. And she just got a peak in her estradiol. So I thought, actually, isn't this interesting? Anyway, but we know when our skin's warmer, we've got our blood vessels come to the surface more. Of course, it's going to absorb that better.
And they dilate.
And they do,
So what about where the fattier areas? I mean, the thing is of course, depending on the product, women are told, put it on your thigh or put it on your lower belly or put it on your back.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't take a doctor to know that people have different amounts of fat in different parts of their body. Yeah. And how much does that impact?
I think it makes a big difference. We didn't look at that in the study, but when I was doing this, I went back to all the, you know, the licensed dose, like you say. Yeah. I went and looked at all the drug companies' results and the studies that they used to work out what the maximum dose was. And I don't know if you've seen, but there's a great table of them, but they've all been done in less than 40 women.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have been done for days, not even weeks or months, because you know what it's like. They want to get the drug to market. They just want to say, does it
stick to market? It's expensive to do these.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you start to look at different body types and different skin types.
Yeah.
Just no,
but
no
even ends. Those studies with very small numbers showed that there was quite a variation with absorption, and there was about a 22-fold absorption between different locations, whether people put it on the thigh or the back or the bottom. Yeah. And as you know, the patches are licensed for below the waist, but you know, if you think on the shoulder, you've got very little fat, on the bottom, there's a lot more, so of course, you're going to absorb differently.
All right, so this is where it gets kind of sticky, because if we say sticky,
it's
your patch sticky, right. But, you know, so if someone were to say, I really want to continue using my transdermal products because of the advantages of transdermal, I'm not absorbing, and if we were to just list off four or five things that someone can do that will maximize their transdermal absorption without switching doses, without switching products, just...
Yeah.
What comes to mind?
I think the most important thing is having the skin really clean and dry. I know that sounds really obvious, but the number of people that might come out of the shower and be running to work and putting on a patch that isn't going to stick well. So making sure the skin is really clean and dry is really important. Putting it on a location that it's hopefully going to stay if it's a patch. On the gel, there's all sorts of theories. Do you rub it? Do you pat it? How does it absorb? I don't think that makes a huge difference. Some people just... know that they absorb better through their arms rather than their legs or whatever.
All right. Well, we've established that heat is good when it comes to absorption. So we have this dilemma of if you get out of the shower and your skin is all nice and warm, that would seem like the optimal time to put your transdermal estrogen on. But if it's a patch, it's going to slide right off unless you're bone dry.
Yeah.
So it seems to me, and I'm just making this up, I don't know. It seems to me that the best time to put on a gel would be when you get out of your nice warm shower or your bath and you pat dry and then you apply your gel, theoretically, it should get better, right?
Theoretically. But then, you know, I'm sure you've got patients, I've got patients where they say they put the gel on and it literally floats off their skin.
Right.
Or they're dancing around the bedroom for an hour waiting to be absorbed. And you think, hang on, that's not right.
Yeah.
And other people, it's like a sponge. They put it on and it's in within seconds.
All right. Well, let me throw this one at you. Years ago, and I don't know if you're aware of this because very few people were, but you probably are. There's a product called Estragel, and I don't know if they had the equivalent in the UK. But when Estragel first came out, and I was reading the fine print on the product label, and it mentioned that if you use a moisturizer on your skin, you will get increased absorption. And I thought to myself, well, that makes sense. And then I was talking to a dermatologist, and she said, oh, yeah, anytime we want someone to use something on their skin and we want it to be well absorbed, we want to make sure that if the skin's not too dry, that
That's interesting, isn't it?
So one would think, and again, I'm just making this up, that if you regularly apply a moisturizer to your skin, and then once the moisturizer's in, you know, so that it's no longer, and then apply your estrogen, theoretically,
you're going to get better absorption. And that's very interesting. So as you know, skin often becomes very dry when people are menopausal.
That's exactly it.
So often we'll start a dose and then we find with time, because as the estrogen gets absorbed, the skin's better, they have better collagen, they have better blood supplies to the skin, the skin doesn't lose as much moisture. Often we reduce the dose because they don't need as much because they're absorbing better.
Right.
And that's why it's so important to review people, you know, regularly as well.
Right.
So,
Being healthy skin.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that someone is doing all the right stuff, being consistent, do everything fine, but they are just not getting the dose that they should. So we mentioned, first of all, of course, obviously they're going to continue to have their symptoms, whether it's their joint pain or their hot flashes, all of that. But big picture, what's the other concern?
The other concern is their bone loss, their, you know, cardiovascular disease risk, their dementia risk, the inflammation that's going on in their body.
Yeah.
And we know that the inflammatory cells, like the macrophages, with low estradiol, they become pro-inflammatory. So in some ways, it's not even that it's neutral. It can be worse for the body to have low estradiol. So that's why it's really important. And people get very confused because our MHRA, your FDA say the lowest dose,
right,
but it's the lowest effective dose.
And we don't even know what that dose is.
No, and everyone's different. So
well, because it depends on when you say effective, what are you treating?
Precisely.
You know, if you're only treating hot flashes, okay, it's when the hot flashes go away. That's easy. Yeah. If you're only treating joint pain, it's when you can open a jar.
I know.
But if you're looking at what is going on at the level of my blood vessels and in my brain, we don't know.
No, we don't know.
And we're not going to know anytime soon.
No, we're not. And we do know that for some, there's some studies, small amounts of work showing that estradiol levels above 400 are better for osteoporosis when you're looking at reducing fractures. Mm-hmm. But we don't know the levels. And also blood levels are still a guide. Like the level in my blood is not the same as a level in my brain, for example, or my muscles or
your uterus.
No.
I also want to point out while we're talking levels, the way you measure levels in the UK is different than the US. So I don't want people thinking, oh my God, my estradiol level is only 50. I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
You are talking about a different way of measuring.
So just be really careful. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very careful with that.
Yeah.
All right. So what we're basically saying here is, yes, it's lovely to get rid of your symptoms when you're using your transdermal estrogen, but it may not be benefiting you in every way that it is. So there is a case to be made for every woman who's using a transdermal estrogen, given that one out of five has subtherapeutic levels to get a blood level, particularly if you're concerned about bone health.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're not gonna get the benefit.
Yeah. I think it is really important, but it's always with a caveat, isn't it? Having that blood test in clinical context is really important. And also making sure it's a venous sample. So when it was COVID and we were all locked in, we tried doing the finger prick samples, but capillary estradiol is not the same as a venous sample. So if people do those pinprick, they often get falsely very high levels of estradiol.
We need to go back because you said capillary and people don't know.
So the pinprick, that's the pinprick.
If you're doing a finger stick, basically, to get blood, which we usually don't do in the US very often.
Okay,
we're generally getting
it's venous
sample.
To get venous.
Exactly.
But the other thing to add, which I didn't do in the study, but just as a sort of aside, is that I've been on the same dose of patches for quite a long time. And I decided to get somebody to test my venous estradiol levels 8 times in a day. My veins were a bit sore by the end of the day, but it was really interesting. My level really changed throughout the day, and so part of it's going to be my metabolism, some of it's going to be the variation in absorption because I get crinkles on the patch, so it's not consistently being absorbed, but also I'm probably producing some estradiol still. You know, we know the brain produces it, the heart produces it. I still got my ovaries. I mean, I'm 54, but I'm still be producing.
Wait, not you, because I'm sitting here. Oh, yeah. I didn't mention, this is a very rare thing. We are actually in the same room.
Yeah.
Yes, because I meant to mention this at the beginning and I forgot. We are both speaking at an event. So I decided to take advantage of this rare opportunity to actually be sitting here with Dr. Newsom so we can have a face-to-face conversation, which is a real treat. Which also means I'm looking at you and you don't have any fat on your body at all. So if you're making estrogen other places, it's not very much because you can make, of course, estrogen in fat cells.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's get to the trickier stuff.
Yeah.
Because we've established that if you're going to take estrogen, we want you to get the biggest bang for your buck.
Mm.
And that a lot of women are not absorbing.
Yes.
So then we basically have two choices. One is to give more transdermal and the other is to use a different product.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to come back to the give more, but for the different products, just to kind of, because that's simpler, is that there is a vaginal ring. Do you have that in the UK?
No, our vaginal ring is only like the
local vaginal. For local
vaginal. Doesn't get absorbed systemically.
Right. So in the US, we have two vaginal rings. Mm-hmm. One is called Estring, which is just for local vaginal estrogen. So for vaginal dryness, bladder symptoms, et cetera. There is another product, and I don't work for any of these companies. There is another product called Femring, which is a ring that goes in the vagina. It stays for 3 months. It slowly releases systemic levels of estrogen. So for me, and it has all the same benefits of transdermal in terms of not increasing your risk of clots. It doesn't increase your triglycerides. All the reasons that we like to go transdermal. So for me, if I have a patient who is not absorbing, my approach is let's go to the ring instead, because as far as we know, you're not dealing with the skin stuff, you know, because you're going to the vaginal mucosa. Again, we don't have good studies on this, but it seems like that would be the workaround. But for you, that's not really a workaround. Definitely. So your workaround would be to use an
oral estrogen. Yeah. We used to have a nasal spray years ago.
Oh, did
you? That was brilliant because it just goes through the nasal mucosa straight into the bloodstream. But
not to mention everything it would do in terms of helping women who have voice changes post-menopause and increase in sleep apnea.
Indeed. Yeah. So, but like anything good for women gets withdrawn, doesn't
Pretty
it?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So anyway, there are the tablets. And I've got some patients, like I've got one lady who's young, she's 36, she's had early menopause and she's a firefighter. So she finds putting on the patches is not good when she's got all her fire equipment, the gels disabsorb. So she uses the tablets, but she also uses the patches when she's not working. So
I think really people are so afraid of oral estrogen based on the WHI. And the truth of the matter is that for most women who are low risk, who don't have a history of blood clots, they really do very, very well on oral estrogen. You know, keeping in mind that while when you say there's double the risk, that sounds terrible, but you're looking at a population of women that had very few blood clots.
Sure.
So if you take double the risk of one in a million, it's still really low. So I think one message is that for a lot of women, oral is absolutely their best option and a viable option, not to mention, and I know you're not a fan, Dr. Newsom, but that when we look at the conjugated equine estrogens, we get the most benefit in terms of breast protection with the data that we currently
have. That's the data for sure. Yeah. Now, we don't have the conjugated equine estrogens. It's very hard to get them in the UK, but we have oral estradiol as well. And it does get metabolized different. So it will get metabolized to estrone as well. And I've got one lady, again, who's had an early surgical menopause, and she gets all these arrhythmias as part of like heart, irregular heart rhythm. She's under a cardiologist. It started very soon after her operation. The transdermal patches, they help everything else, but they don't help her irregular heartbeat. Taking it orally does. So it's really interesting. Metabolically, it works differently.
Right. But and that's what we're always talking about with precision menopause, nuanced care, because everyone always says, we just gave this talk together. One of the questions was during the Q&A, is someone said to me, well, what's the best product for everyone to use? And my answer was, there is no one best product.
Yeah.
This is based on your goals, your medical history, your personal preference, what your insurance, what country you're in, you know, all of these things are going to determine
also really changes when people are perimenopausal, what they need then to when they're menopausal is very different as well. Sometimes we give higher doses when people are perimenopausal to stop that fluctuation.
You know, you've got to override it, basically.
And then when their own hormones stop, it can be easier, but then they can sometimes you reduce the dose and they don't need as much.
Right.
Or sometimes when they're perimenopausal, they might only need a little bit to top up. And then as their own hormones decline, they need more. So it's not just like the dose that they start on, because many people change. And that's why it's so important that people get reviewed as well.
Absolutely. It's not goodbye, good luck, see you in a year.
Especially initially. And I think perimenopause can be like trying to chase a moving target.
Well, it is a moving target, isn't it?
You think you've got there and then something happens.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, a lot of my patients, and I'm sure yours are the same, once you optimize their dose, then they start to exercise, they feel better, they're eating differently, so they're metabolizing differently. Mm-hmm. So then their requirements are going to change as well.
Not to mention, I'm not even going to get into, there's a lot of literature now on women who are using cannabis and how cannabis and estrogen interact, but that's a whole other topic. All right. So now I want to get into the controversial area where you've gotten some pushback.
Yeah.
Because I know that with your patients, very often your approach is, okay, your blood estrogen level is too low and you are on the maximum dose that you're supposed to be on. So I'm going to give you more.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying to you, you can't do that. That's dangerous. Yeah. That's bad.
Yeah.
You're going to have too many complications down the road.
Yeah.
So that's really the kind of the sticky part of this. So talk to me about your approach, and then I'm going to talk to you about my concerns.
The first thing that I think is really interesting and important for people to know, that when we prescribe either off-label dose or off-license, so if something's been licensed for one indication, for example, we give epilepsy medication to stop migraine, it's licensed.
We give birth control pills to stop cramps.
Yes.
It's so, legitimate, even though it's off-label.
So and then off the off-label dosing, we do quite a lot for all sorts of medication.
Correct.
You know, so it's not just I'm the only person in the whole world for this. It's really, but it's important for people to know that as well. So, but a lot of it is becoming, it's come from misunderstanding, actually. And when people started to sort of attack or criticize me, I spoke to a professor of pharmacology, so drug medicine, and his special interest is in absorption through the skin. And I spoke to him and I said, oh, I just really would like to know what your thoughts are. And he said, Louise, there's very few things in medicine that we prescribe through the skin, because the skin is a barrier. You do not put on your moisturizer or your sun cream and expect it to be absorbed into the body. So he said, if you think you've got estradiol, testosterone, you've got fentanyl patches, you've got nicotine patches, oxybutynin patch, there's not much. You know, if you think of the hundreds of things we can prescribe as doctors, they're usually as tablets, sometimes intravenous through the veins, or sometimes as pessaries, but very, very few through the skin. So we said, what you're describing here is just basic pharmacology. It's about absorption, it's metabolism. It's and if you think the patches, the glue contains the estradiol.
Yeah.
So on my patches, I've already said they crinkle. So I'm not absorbing the whole amount. When I take them off twice a week, my skin's red underneath. So they're not very good. But the other manufacturer patches I tried, they slide off. They just end up in my clothes, and the gel just slides off my skin. So I'm using a higher dose, but I'm trying to get an adequate amount through the skin. Yeah. I think some people, what they do is they think a higher dose means that you're getting more absorbed, and it's not. You see what I mean?
Yes. So, okay. So I'm going to take the other side for a minute because this is the issue. I think it's a no-brainer that if your blood levels are low, you want to get them to a therapeutic dose. Yeah. And the way to do that is to give more estrogen. Yeah. While we think that the problem is primarily lack of absorption, there is always the concern that maybe someone's just a fast metabolizer or both. We don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this is the issue. When we give estrogen to someone that has a uterus, we always give either a progesterone or a progesterone alternative to protect the buildup of the lining in the uterus, which of course over time increases the risk of uterine precancer or cancer. And so when we are using the standard doses of estrogen with the standard doses of progesterone, we know that that has been tested so that we know that you're not going to get that abnormal buildup in the lining of the uterus. So theoretically, the concern is that if you're giving someone a lot more estrogen to get relief of their symptoms and to get their doses, their blood levels a little higher, how do we know that there isn't more that's getting to the uterus? Because you just said yourself a few minutes ago that the amount of estrogen that gets to your brain is different than what gets to your joints, is different than what gets in your bloodstream, and is different than what gets to your uterus. And let me just say one more thing before I let you talk, is that very often someone will say, well, I measured my estrogen or progesterone levels to make sure I was okay. But we know that your blood estrogen and progesterone levels do not reflect what's going on in the uterine lining.
Okay.
So my question to you, Dr. Newsom, is how do we know that if you are just, I'm going to exaggerate to make the point, if you're slapping 10 patches on someone so that they get adequate symptom relief and get the kind of therapeutic dose we're looking for, how do we know that that's not impacting the uterus in a way which over time may be problematic?
So there's a few things to unpick there. Firstly, I've never prescribed 10 patches.
I know you have.
No, but it's awesome because it could be taken out of context.
So if you give someone two.
Secondly, I don't do progesterone levels because when you look at the data, they just vary too much. Right. It's too hard to see. So I don't do that. Thirdly, there isn't really robust data about the standard doses of estradiol with the standard doses of progesterone. Certainly there isn't long-term data. And also there is no literature to show that estradiol causes endometrial cancer. So the studies about estrogen-only HRT were with the conjugated equine estrogens. So if you look metabolically with estradiol, then it doesn't increase inflammation, it doesn't increase cancer risk. It will increase hyperplasia, so thickening, which is a natural process that occurs when women are menstruating.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you on that for a minute. You are correct in that we do not have studies that show that giving estradiol causes uterine cancer, but that's because we've never given estradiol alone.
But if you,
well, no, just say back up because people don't know what we're talking about here. Before, years ago, when Premarin was the only estrogen around, which is conjugated equine estrogen, and they were giving it to women, and a lot of women were taking it, and they found that there was a tenfold increase in uterine cancer in women that were using Premarin over time. And what they learned is that they needed to add a progesterone in order to counteract that. So that's where that data is from.
Yeah.
So it's not that estradiol alone doesn't cause hyperplasia. It's no one has ever done that study.
Yeah, but all I'm thinking about, firstly, is metabolically. So if you think of conjugated equine estrogens, they contain lots of estrogens, but also progesterones as well. So we don't know. No one can say it's the estradiol in conjugated equine estrogens.
That's correct. You can't say that. And you can't measure levels because there's too many types of estrogen.
Absolutely not. So you can't equate one with the other. Then some people say, well, actually, we know that people have more estrogen in their body if they're overweight, if they've got diabetes, if they've got metabolic syndrome, because they have an increased risk of endometrial cancer. But actually, those people have more estrone in the body. And there's good data looking at the difference between estrone, which is the inflammatory type of estrogen that our fat cells produce, compared to estradiol. So when people say estrogen, like, it's not specific enough. So we have to know the difference between estradiol and estrone.
We should be saying estrogens instead of
absolutely.
Estrogen.
And it's, so it's very confusing for people.
It is confusing.
It's very confusing for doctors. Yeah. Absolutely, really confusing. So then looking at estradiol, we don't know. is a simple thing. We haven't got studies to show it's good. We haven't got studies to show it's harmful when we're looking at estradiol on the endometrium, the lining of the womb. But then we're going back to the thing about dosing. The main reason that we give higher doses is for adequate absorption. I've already said, and our paper shows, that some women who have lower doses of estradiol have higher levels. So it makes sense. If you've got a higher level in your blood, you're probably getting more to your womb. It'd be very difficult to have somebody like me who's not absorbing well to suddenly have a higher amount in the womb. But, you know, in medicine, there are lots of things we don't know. Right. And then it's about choice. You know, I'm very fortunate in the clinic because we have quite long consultations, so we can share uncertainty with patients. I mean, I've actually had a hysterectomy.
I was just going to say, you know, the women that we worry about the least. I once made the mistake. I was talking to a big room of women. There were like 1,000 women. And I don't remember. I was talking about something. And I said something like, and those lucky women who've had hysterectomies. Yeah. And I got this gasp from the audience because that was not the way to put it. But the truth of the matter is, in the menopause world, it's so much easier to prescribe estrogen when we're not worried about that potential buildup in the lining of the uterus.
Absolutely. But the other thing is as well, is that, well, there are two more things, actually. One of the things is when we give the dose of progesterone, we very much individualize it because there are some women who have lower doses, but they're bleeding. And they might have some endometrial hyperplasia or thickening, and we'll give them a higher dose. So they might be on a lower dose of estradiol, but they need a higher dose of progesterone. Right. And then I have others that have a higher dose of estradiol. They don't bleed. They have a scan. Their endometrium is lovely and thin. So you think, well, why am I giving them don't forget, if we increase the dose of progesterone, that's an off-label dose.
Absolutely.
So what I find weird in my mind that some people are attacking me, really, for prescribing a higher dose of estrogen.
I don't want to use the word attack. No, I said pushback. Yeah, you have been attacked. Let's just put it out there.
But then they're quite happy to give a higher dose of progesterone to women. So it's like, well, hang on, this doesn't make sense. The other thing is, though, to add, is that there is a part two for our research, is that we monitor people who have scans and have bleeding. And so we're just writing it up now. So I'm not going to tell you the result, but I can tell you. But we're looking at every person who's had bleeding and had a scan. We're looking at their results. We're looking at their doses, not just of estradiol, but of progesterone as well. And the results are very, I can tell you, they're very reassuring. That's the good thing.
And do you have many patients or any that have a levonorgestrel IUD, a progesterone IUD?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I would think.
Yes.
That so with those theoretically, those are the ones that are getting the most protection.
Yes. So we've got those in the study as well. So when I say it's another observational, it's looking at our data practice. So we've got people who are using different doses of progesterone and also with the intrauterine device and then different doses of estradiol and then looking at their scan results, which is really important. Because like you say, we haven't got the studies, but then a lot of people aren't collecting the data either.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, one of the problems is it is very frustrating because the absence of data is not the same as data.
Of course.
And we are in the real world dealing with real women who are looking for solutions.
Yeah.
And if we're going to be prescribing hormone therapy, we want people to get the full benefit. Yeah. And I think the major thing that I think we can take away from all of this is, number one, what happens in the real world is different than what happened in the clinical trials where they set these standard doses. And where I have always, always said, if you're on hormone therapy, you don't need to get levels checked. I am now changing that recommendation. Yes. And I am saying that even if your symptoms seem to be better, if you are using a transdermal product and if you're concerned about your bone health and other benefits, it's worth getting a level.
Yeah.
And then the final thing is that if in fact you are using, well, even if you're not using estrogen, for quite frankly, or estrogen, whether it's the regular amounts or more, do not ignore any bleeding ever, even if it's just a spot of blood. In most cases, it is not an indication of cancer or something serious, but you need to get it checked out to make sure that you do not have an abnormal buildup in the lining of the uterus. But this is particularly true when we're using off-label dosages, because we want to make sure that you're not going to get trouble down the road.
It's so important. And it's very easy usually because it involves a scan, which isn't painful. It's not too intrusive. And, you know, we often find people who have a polyp or a fibroid, something else that's causing their bleeding, which has nothing to do with their dose or type. So it is really important.
Yeah. And the last thing I'm going to ask you, and this may not be an issue in the UK, it certainly is in the United States, is women have enough trouble getting their estrogen covered in the regular doses. If suddenly they're saying we need to use double the gel, or maybe, you know, putting on two patches or something, do you have any trouble getting that covered with your insurance?
No, so we're very fortunate, actually. So one of our MPs, Carolyn Harris, did a lot of campaigning a few years ago, and I'm on the government menopause task force, to try and get HRT as cheap as possible for people. Mm-hmm. So now they pay one prescription charge and they can have as many prescriptions
even
of
if
HRT.
It's off-label.
Yeah. Because like I say, lots of things we do off-label. So And that makes a big difference.
Yeah, we're not going to have it that easy in the U.S. I mean, we're running into trouble where if we are prescribing systemic estrogen for hot flashes, et cetera, and then we also prescribe a local vaginal estrogen for vulvovaginal and bladder symptoms, and we've got pharmacists telling women, you can't do that, it's too much estrogen, or insurance companies saying you can't do that. And it's like, are you kidding? You know, we are still using minute amounts. It is completely safe. So I can only imagine what would happen if we said, Mrs. Smith needs double patches. So there's that.
That's hard.
What haven't I asked you that you want to mention, that I should have asked you, that you want to add?
I think the most important thing is that women have really individualized consultations. You know, medicine is a science and an art. The science is using the evidence and the art is individualizing it. And, you know, the way I practice now compared to 10, 20 years ago is very different because it really isn't a one size fits all.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. It's also maybe to add, you know, sometimes I do it with patients. I've got a lady at the moment who's got endometriosis, but she's really struggling mentally with symptoms. And I know it's related to her hormones because everything else has been excluded. She's on the patches, she is absorbing, but I've given her some gel as well because she's perimenopausal.
Yeah.
So sometimes that you can use a combination when people just need a few days maybe of, you know, when their own hormones are fluctuating.
You know, I think your point is so well taken that you and I have both been at this one longer than you for decades. And while there's a lot of new people on the scene, and I'm not saying anything bad about any of them because, you know, many of them are very good and they read the literature. But the truth is there is a lot to be said for someone who's treated thousands of patients.
It makes such
as opposed to hundreds of patients.
You
because,
know,
because we've seen it all, right?
Yeah. You see, you learn from patients. It's such a privilege being a doctor. But the other thing is that's different in our practice in the UK is that we see our patients coming back to us.
Yeah.
It's really awful. I don't know what it's like in the US, but in the UK, if you go and see an NHS, National Health Service gynecologist, they don't even prescribe for you because the NHS say, no, you can't prescribe in the hospital. So if you were prescribing for me as a patient, you would tell me I needed 100 micrograms and then I would have to go and see my GP for it. Now, if then I saw you rather in the NHS rather than Nick Panay, I would have then said to my doctor, I don't feel any better. Well, then she probably would have said, have some antidepressants. And Nick would never have known that I needed a different dose.
Right.
So you learn when your patients come back and back. And that's really important, I think.
Another thing also that I think I've learned with all of my experience, quite frankly, is listen to your patient and believe your patient.
Absolutely.
Because when my patients first started telling me I'm not feeling any better, and you're kind of thinking to yourself, oh, I wonder if they're using it as directed or I wonder if they're doing it right. And with time, you learn, no, if she says something's not helping, you got to listen and you got to figure out what the problem is.
And the other thing maybe just to add is that just to remind people that when we give it as patches or gels, it doesn't build up in the system. I think they think there's this sort of build up. That
there's this little mountain of estrogen.
So, you know, I always say to people, like if they're still having symptoms, even if their blood level's a bit low, I'll say, I don't know whether your joint pains are due to your low hormones or not. I can increase them because your blood level's low, but then let's review and see. If you feel worse, you go back to what you were on before. Yeah. Within a day, your level would have dropped because it doesn't stay in your body. You know, and if you're still getting symptoms and your level's normal, then yes, let's look at, is there arthritis? Is there something else going on? Not everything is due to hormones.
No, exactly. All right. I know everybody probably knows about your podcast and your book and everything, but for the, you know, like the one person who doesn't, tell people where they can find
you. The easiest thing is just to go to my website, which is Dr. as in Dr. LouiseNewson.co.uk. So my podcast that I do weekly are on there, all my articles that I've written about me, everything is there. So there's lots of free resources, and also the Balance app as well, which is a free app that people can download.
Excellent. Well, this has been terrific.
Oh, it's been great. Thank
and now
you.
Let's go have dinner.
Great. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. And if you're looking for more inside information, check out my Substack. Just go to drstriker.substack.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram @drstrike.